Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the Peakist Reality Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, patch 9.1 PTR is finally here. We are no longer scraping the bottom of the barrel for topics, and we're going to spend the whole show talking about stuff from the new patch. Along with, you might, if you've been listening to previous episodes of the podcast, you may recall that last week we had a predictions episode where we just kind of went nuts and made a bunch of predictions about what would be in the patch. And we are going to also talk a little bit about what we got right, what we got wrong, and what I have no idea we even talked about, honestly. Some of these things I'm like, we predicted that? Okay.
Yeah. We got a lot of things not right, I'll say. Maybe not wrong per se, but definitely not right.
I will say you would be like, so if you're measuring the like predictive accuracy of something, once it drops below like 50%, it starts being more accurate to take what it says and just do the opposite.
Yeah.
And I think we're at that point.
I think we are with our predictions. I think we are. Particularly the lore one, which we'll get into, I think, a little bit later. We talk a little bit about that. But yeah, our lore, my lore idea, I'm going to save face and part of it. We'll get into it, but not even close to being right.
So.
But cool. I guess we'll run a little bit into what happened last week, which wasn't much other than the patch. We'll go into, I guess, a couple things, and then we'll get into the patch stuff. So. A couple of cool stories, really, kind of a little bit WoW themed, a little bit outside of WoW. But first up is the Warcraft Twitter became active again, Warcraft movie Twitter particularly became active again and posted about 15 minutes worth of deleted scenes from the movie, which is cool. I mean, if you enjoyed the movie or didn't enjoy the movie, it's whatever. But the scenes sort of add a little bit more in terms of like character development and, you know, kind of you learn a little bit more. There's also Chris Metzen's cameo. Is in one of the deleted scenes.
Wait, they cut his cameo from the movie? I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit.
So, yeah. But it was a little bit interesting. You get to see a little backstory, some fun stuff. So, I take a look at it. It's about 15 minutes worth of, like, deleted scenes. So, it's a fair number. Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Yeah, I mean, I watched the movie maybe once or twice. It was like, I hate to say it, it was like every other video game movie. Like, they just... They took like the one thing that probably didn't make sense and then just drove that home as like the only topic. So yeah, it was
nice.
Yeah. Wasn't Super Mario Brothers bad, but it was not any good, I'll say. So that's on the movie side of things. Back in game a little bit. So the world first plus 27 was timed this week. So the first
Plaguefall too.
Yeah, Plaguefall of all ones. But that's really interesting with the the Great Push coming up.
I would be very surprised. So like for the Great Push, they're given a set of keys, right?
Yeah, you're given
basically not gonna be one of them. I'm calling that right now.
I can imagine.
Because if you've seen what they can do with plague borers.
Yeah.
And especially so like you can actually walk around the guy that just like continuously spawns the plague borers and just keep using them for the whole dungeon.
Yeah.
So you get to that point and you use those to clear backwards and you use them to clear forwards and then you kill the bosses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did like a 17 of that this week with a tank that actually knew what they were doing and was doing the plague borer stuff. That's and awesome. Like most of the key, there was no reason for me to actually push buttons. Like I was basically there to do whatever like 5% of HP was left after a plague borer explosion. And then eat a B-res when I inevitably got hit by one.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah, so Plaguefall. Probably definitely leverage that little strat to get that done. But yeah, they did a plus 27, which is huge. So
yeah. Now that makes me, I'm not saying like that's trivial because the plague borer is like they kill the things for you. It makes the damage check on most of the like trash irrelevant. but plus 27 Stradama sounds crazy.
Not fun how they got through that. So yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if there's anybody else that sort of climbs up there. Plaguefall just becomes the new push key in terms of like the upper limit. So yeah, it'll be fun. So that's a huge achievement for them. Next up, we have another interesting one, sort of outside of WoW, but sort of somewhat related to what we've been talking about the past couple of weeks, is David Kim has left Blizzard. So for those of you who aren't familiar with who David Kim is, I mean, he basically came to prominence around the StarCraft II beta, particularly being lead balance designer. I don't know what his title would be, but he basically was in charge of balance. If you ever remember watching some of the SC2 like beta matches, it was always David Kim plus someone else. So he was sort of the main player there. And he's jumped around teams. So he's worked on not only SC2, which is where he made his name, at least from a public facing thing. He's also worked on Diablo 3, Diablo 4, and World of Warcraft. He ended up being, I think he was lead systems designer on Shadowlands. Helping to ship it through the past couple months.
I don't know. He from reading the WoWhead post, like, he was lead systems designer on Diablo 4.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he did come on to the WoW team last November. Let me see. Let me follow this through, see what he was doing on it.
Yeah.
Principal game designers. You were not far off. Like,
yeah, so he's basically a Blizzard veteran, another veteran. I mean, you know, was a part of that initial StarCraft II team when they brought that on, which was, you know, he was well-regarded in the community, at least to be very open with the community, sort of talking back and forth, talking about balance changes, things he did with that game. And I think he was actually just a competitive StarCraft I player, too, at the time.
That makes sense.
Part, so, yeah. But, yeah, him leaving... I think a couple of posts. I read the Icy Veins announcement of this one. They're like, let's keep an eye on what is it? Dreamhaven is Morheim Studio. Oh, let's keep an eye on Dreamhaven if David's gonna end up over there. So,
which for the record, we have no idea where he's going at this point. But there has been a pattern, and even if the pattern is not Blizzard, like longtime Blizzard employees going to Dreamhaven, there is definitely a pattern of longtime Blizzard employees leaving Blizzard right now.
Yes. Yeah, which is, I think, maybe not concerning, but maybe this is like the phase two of Blizzard, or the point in time where like we start to see the studios, I'm not going to say decline, because I think they're still putting out good games, but it's like where the studio shifts, where like Westwood stopped making Command and Conquer games and became something a little bit different, you know. The
I wish Westwood Studios had stopped making Command and Conquer games.
Well, they did, and then EA bought them and started making like CNC Generals. The new ones.
Generals was actually fine, but there is
no Red Alert 2. Okay,
it was definitely not Red Alert 2. But let's be honest, very few games are on that's that true. Level.
God, such a good game. But in any event, or you could also reference like Maxis with the Sims games, right? Is another issue. So we'll see. But yeah, it's just another longtime employee leaving, which sucks. But hopefully he finds a cool home to do some cool work. So next up, sort of this is a patch thing, but I thought it was slightly outside of it. What we'll talk about is that Blizzard is adding Raider.io. Well, not Raider.io score, but they're adding essentially a dungeon score, a Mythic Plus score, to the default UI. So Raider.io put out a post about this, that they're sort of advising them on the scoring system. We can just assume this is another idea of, you know, gear score add-on being integrated in the UI in terms of providing item level data. Very similar here. We'll see a Raider.io like score in the default UI coming up in patch 9.1. So
I'm very excited about this, because this actually means that, so like right now, if you want to upgrade stuff with Valor, you have to get like every dungeon done on 15, mm-hmm. which is very like restrictive, you know. You can do a lot of keys and not actually have all of them timed on a 15, which, like, that's me. Lots and lots of the other side. Very, very few dungeons timed over 15. I say very few. I'm still, like, two dungeons off of it now.
Getting there.
Maybe this week. Maybe not this week. It's tyrannical week. I don't know. But, like, this opens up the possibility that next season, the way that Valor upgrades work is could be based on your score, which is not something that they could have done this season because there just wasn't a score.
Yeah.
So if they want to do something like in arenas or like in PvP where your rating determines how high you can upgrade stuff, like this gives them the ability to do that with Mythic Plus. Like your Mythic Plus score can now directly control like how far you could upgrade your Valor pieces.
To be fair, I had not thought about that. That's a really interesting point.
So. And that's not my original like idea of what they might be doing either. I stole that from somebody in Peak.
But gotcha.
I think it might have been Jaxel that was speculating about that. But
that's an interesting point. That's really cool though if they end up doing that. So, but yeah, so this will be in the default UI. You'll be able to see the score. It'll be fun. People are already complaining.
Oh yeah.
It is what it is.
The same, so. Like, there's a couple of threads from the PTR forums that I have heard have lots, like, get some popcorn. Because there is a sizable contingent of the, the people that are casual but think they are, like, limit tier. That kind of player.
Gotcha.
It is very not a fan of Raider Die score.
Yeah.
Because theirs sucks and they blame the score and not themselves.
Exactly.
And like, yeah, my score is not great, but I know exactly why my score is not great. It's because almost all of my dungeon runs are on the other side in Plaguefall.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, it'll be cool if they actually do add that to sort of more granularity in terms of the upgrades, which will be fun. But yeah, Raider Die score coming to default UI. I wonder what they'll call it. Maybe it's just like Mythic Plus score.
It might just rating. Be Mythic Plus score. Like it's very straightforward, and or maybe they lean on the rating thing, and then it's like Mythic Plus rating.
That'd be cool. We'll see. We'll see how it ends up. Next up, speaking of people who are upset, because I actually did read a couple threads about this one. The Slime Serpent Mount has been found by the Secret Discord, and you get it by soloing the last two bosses of Plaguefall. People are upset about this because it was found out today, Emelson, and they do not have the gear or the ability to solo the last two bosses because they are X-class that can't do it. They're upset that people get things before them, and this is egregious. And
I love that, like, this is like, an account-wide thing. You can do it on one character and get it on every character. It's like...
It's so not going away.
Main, or a mage main. Like, eventually... For one thing, eventually it will be trivial, right? Because this isn't going away. Like, none of the other secret mounts have gone away. Some of them are a lot harder to get because you have to, like, find a group to do them.
Yeah.
But they're still in the game. This is just one that's going to get easier to get as time goes on. Like by the end of the expansion, soloing this on here, you have to solo it on heroic or mythic. You cannot solo it on normal.
Yeah.
But like soloing this on heroic, if you're mythic geared, like I haven't tried yet, but it doesn't sound very hard. And if you're not, 2 tiers from now, it's not going to matter.
Exactly.
Like they scale it up, but they don't scale it up by that much.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, it's so weird that like, if you cared enough about this to go and get it, then like put in the work to go and get it if you don't have the quote unquote like meta class to get this done, which I don't even know if there's a meta class for this because it literally was found the other day. So
I've seen a couple of choice WoWhead comments of people being like, oh man, this is really a slap in the face. Like a bunch of classes just can't get this. Like most of the tanks are fine, but Monk Tank can't get it. Meanwhile, we literally have like multiple people in Brew Lounge today, they heard about it and just went and got it.
Walked in and sold it, yeah.
Just walked in and did it.
It's just, I'll never get this, that aspect of it, right? Which is like, I can't do it. I mean, like the Mage Tower is like a perfect, another perfect example of this where like people complained that they didn't get it done the first week. I'm like, it's supposed to be super hard content. It just happens to be solo hard content.
I spent way too much time on the Mage Tower because I was not mythic rating by that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going in with like heroic Emerald Nightmare gear.
Yeah, that's
nine hole gear. It was like, what was, I guess it was not Emerald Night, it was heroic nine hole gear, it would have been. It was like 890. And that was very hard. I spent a lot of time in it. I could probably like walk back in and do it blindfolded, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had the similar thing. I actually
kind of understand the complaint about some classes being a lot harder than others, because doing it on a vengeance team another was a complete fucking joke. Like, I did that one at I level 880 in like 8 pulls. And then my monk, I probably had a couple hundred just because it was a lot harder. Like, yeah. You get knocked off. Like, getting knocked off is, depending on your latency, just a one shot on the monk. But Demon Hunter is just like lol glide.
Yeah. That's fair. Maybe that's fair, but yeah,
I think it's like a time limited thing, right? That was time limited. So the harder ones, like, you had to do something harder in the same amount of time.
Yeah.
And I know, like, by the end of the expansion, it was kind of trivial and you can do it on whatever, because I did it on whatever. I have almost all of them. But yeah, I think that one has a little bit more weight than, like, complaining about something that's literally never going away.
Get it later, man. Or, like, level something up and get it if you want it sooner. Like, if you don't think you're going to be able to do it, yeah. I don't know.
I leveled the warrior this week. I went from 45 to 60 over the past week. It's nice. Not that bad. Level a tank. It's real quick.
That's funny. Oh man! All right. Well, that's the slime serpent. It's been found. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll try and do it on my Mistweaver. We'll see how that goes. And okay. So final news thing, which is sort of WoW-ish related, but this is more personally. I really like this stuff. Is the world record for Nax 40 Classic has been broken, by Progress, the guild Progress. They completed Nax 40 on Classic in what was it? 45 minutes, I think. 47. 45 minutes and 18 seconds.
That's honestly impressive. I'm pretty sure that, like, in the past when I've gone and, like, done axe clears solo for transmog, it's taken me more than 45 minutes to walk through the place.
It's super cool. And the way they did it was actually a really interesting strat. So they gained the most time because what they ended up doing was essentially doing Thaddeus as the final boss, the final end tier boss, before going to Saffron and taking Polarity Shift, which is the damage buff, into Saffron and doing Saffron with Polarity Shifts. And the fact is, if they needed their tanks hold aggro with all their people doing like 7 or 8k DPS, or I guess it was like they had an average raid DPS of like 5k, which is massive in Classic.
I mean, I think it's funny. 5k raid DPS right now would actually be like totally competent.
Yeah, exactly. That we've gone back to those numbers. But they did it using Light of a Loon, which, if you don't remember, it's a one-time use quest item that makes you vulnerable to damage for 10 seconds. So because Saffron cleaves, essentially whenever the tank was tanking Saffron, they'd pop that potion so they'd live through all the damage. And so they basically had to race the clock. But they killed Saffron, what was it, in 24 seconds? And previous Saffron kills are like in the 80-ish second range for like typicals. So they were definitely more efficient, because I think they beat the record by over 2 minutes, like 2.5 minutes. So that didn't account for all the time they saved. Was that Saffron's track? That's quite
a bit. Like, they shaved a minute off their time just with that.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely a minute right there.
Phenomenal. I cannot believe, because that's a one time, like, you can only get one of those per character. Yeah. If you use it,
yeah,
doesn't
early.
Matter if it's wasted, like, it's gone. You can never get it again. So they had to level up characters with like the intention of using them for that. Or, I mean, if they're anything like me, they probably just still had it in their bags.
Exactly. And we're waiting for the right time. Yeah. Yeah. So that was cool. It was a cool little strat.
So,
yeah, it was a cool little strat. I watched sort of the Thaddeus part, which was pretty funny. So they basically held DPS right at the end. So they literally had a polarity shift, which is when your signs change or whatever. So they had the full duration. Killed him in the next second, then ran through the portal and dropped right in Saffron's room and killed Saffron in 24 seconds, which is crazy. So
that's amazing.
So that was the cool speedrun strat there. So I think that's it for stuff last week. I mean, I think the news week was dominated by the patch, which is where we'll spend most of our time. But those are just some of the quick things from last week. So I want to turn our tables into 9.1 is here. At least the first glimpse of it. I think I wanted to start at least going through some of the class changes, because it's probably what most people care about, want to hear about, all that fun stuff.
I have bad news.
Yeah. Oh, you do? Oh, I have not good news either. What's your bad news?
Bad news is there are none.
Oh, well, okay. So mine's not that bad. So at least for Mistweavers, Mistweavers actually got a ton. I'll say not a ton, but they got the majority of our changes, or really all of our changes, were on PvP. So we had a ton of PvP changes in terms of, like, I think we have the ability now to, like, do things while we're stunned, which is I think was the biggest complaint. So there's a bunch of that. And there's just been a, across the board, a bunch of different changes in terms of, like, buffs to specific PvP abilities, you know, changes to other things. So, so yeah, it seems like it's the PvP tuning pass for Mistweaver. But other than that, I think the only other interesting thing that people are trying to point out that might be an actual class change is that Revival has gone from none to one charge, and that the charge rate has a 3-minute cooldown. So to be fair, this actually doesn't change anything in PvE. Some of the speculation is that this has to deal with the way that one of the PvP talents is functioning, and that the way that Blizzard is making it work is by just changing it into a charge system and you know, utilizing the charge to make the needed time reduction or cooldown reduction on it. So
I mean, maybe. I know that Keg Smash, for example, got changed to the charge system in Legion when we got the legendary that gives it an extra charge.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be totally surprised to see it actually get a charge. But then it's also one of those things where it's like not a functional change for the most part.
Right now. So yeah, unless they're coming later with some sort of, to your point, legendary or something additional that makes changes to Revival, it's a non-issue.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing is Thunder Focus T got two additional triggers. So it triggers now on Crackling Jade Lightning and Essence Font. Crackling Jade Lightning essentially knocks back immediately. It would only knock back if you're channeling on someone in melee range of you. And then the other piece was with Essence Font, there's a movement speed increase whenever you use Thunder Focus T than Essence Font. Those both seem like more PvP oriented changes.
Yeah. So movement speed on Essence Font is only for you?
Yes.
Man, you said that, I was like, man, wow, Aurora. Wait, no.
No. Only for the caster.
Only for the caster.
So basically, at least the first pass here for this week has been mostly PvP changes. And really, I guess Windwalker got nothing either. So it's really was just...
It's a Mistweaver show.
Mistweaver PvP show, which I don't do that on my Mistweaver. So, but I think it's needed. Because from what I've heard, it's rough out there. We actually got somebody new in Discord that's super nice. But all they talk about is like sort of PvP stuff. They post like little videos of like, what is happening here? Like, why am I dying? Like all this type of stuff. And it's like, yeah,
PvP.
You're playing Mistweaver. So, but yeah. Hopefully this helps. We'll see though. To be fair, I know nothing in this area. It's just, they seem like good changes. So
yeah.
That's the class changes, quick and easy. But some of the, I think the bigger systems changes they've done is one of the big ones is they've added essentially three new soulbind traits to every soulbind tree.
Yep. So if you remember back before they switched to the new talent system, every expansion we used to get new layers on the talent trees at the bottom. Mm-hmm. They literally just did that to the soulbind trees. That's like the whole thing. Notably, there are new like potent like conduit slots in there, right? So trees get like three potency conduits is now possible, which it puts tanks in a very interesting situation, having exactly three potency conduits, which
means you get extra endurance.
Exactly three potency conduits. So that means that, this is like speculation for the future, but in 9.2, if they want to do this again, they have to add more potency conduits.
Yeah.
Or tanks literally won't be able to use some pass of, or like we'll have to have empty conduit slots in some pass of the tree.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So the way it ends up working, I think, is at the top of the, to your point, at the end of the tree, it's essentially after your current capstone ability, there's one potency slot. And then your tree basically branches into two different traits you can pick. Underneath of those traits is either an endurance conduit slot or a finesse conduit slot. And then finally, there is one capstone ability below that for basically three total. So you can only basically pick two of the three.
Here's
Yeah, though.
The Polygos tree for monks as an example. Let me just click through. So this right here is the spot where it ends right now. Let go of the past. We have an actually mandatory potency conduit slot. You have to take that one. And yep. You have to take this one. So, and you get a couple of options here. And then there's a new capstone at the bottom. And some of the capstones, actually, some of the new soulbind traits in general are just extremely good. Pelagos's are not.
It depends on the proc rate on that one. That one's going to be tough.
Yeah. But, okay. Even just being 40 mastery for you and your partner is actually not at all close to some of the other ones that are in the game right now. Let's go look at Mechanicos for a comparison. Mechanicos has this thing, okay? This thing says, after taking physical or magical damage, gain a shield that absorbs damage equal to 8% of your maximum health for 10 seconds. Happens at most once per damage type. And they mean physical or magical, not like fire, frost, nature. Like physical or magical, once per 30 seconds. So it's like up to 16% of your HP every 30 seconds. And like, it's not great. It ended up doing about 400 HPS on my monk in raid testing. But that's not even the best one. Well, like, there's stuff like this thing that was actually just 10% of my damage in raid testing. Weapons of Order releases a blast of overcharged anima at your target's location, dealing damage split evenly between all targets, and reduces the cooldown of your Kyrian ability. And the amount of cooldown that you get and the amount of damage that it does actually scales with the cooldown of your ability. So, for example, Kyrian Warrior ability is a 1-minute cooldown. Their numbers are half as big as Weapons of Order, which is a 2-minute cooldown, mm-hmm. which would presumably be then smaller than a 3 or 4 minute cooldown. But there's actually stuff like Night Fae. Where's the one? Here we go. Waking Dreams. Whenever you take damage below 80% health, you gain a shield for 30% of the damage amount lasting 3 seconds. My warrior Kotank in PTR testing was running this. And legitimately just had 1,200 HPS from this trait.
They got to add an ICD to that. There's no internal cooldown on that?
There's not.
That's and ridiculous.
It was 1,200 HPS with overhealing. So it's really going to be more like, I think it was, we mapped it out, it would have been 1,400 plus HPS.
Jeez.
Raid testing.
That.
And it would have been, like, Brewmaster can actually realistically hit that amount. And it would have been higher because it actually scales with Celestial Fortune for Brewmasters. Oh, nice. So it would have been another 30% higher just based on that.
That's crazy.
So there are some very, very good Soulbind traits, some of which I'm sure will be nerfed. But one of the things that I am curious is if this will cause a shift in the meta for, like, different Covenants, because a lot of classes have like two, well, especially for classes that have, like, we talked a little bit about this last week, classes that have bad soulbind or covenant abilities, like warlocks. Like, if suddenly the class with the best soulbind traits changes, the covenant with the best soulbind trait changes, do they switch covenants? Especially with Warlock is maybe the wrong one to mention because Affliction got gutted and Destro got buffed, so they're probably changing anyway.
Yeah.
But like for Monk, for Brewmaster, Brewmaster's gotten no changes so far. Will it make sense maybe to switch from Kyrian to Night Fae if some of these Soulbind traits go in as they are now, basically?
Yeah, which is crazy, yeah.
So...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't deep dive these yet from Mistweaver. I basically just reviewed a lot of the Kyrian ones. I don't think it changes at least our Kyrian trait, our Kyrian choice. Like, Clea is still hands down the best, and her capstone ability, which actually gives you crit based on the number of stacks of Valiant Strikes you have, is even better. So, I mean, but there's definitely some interesting ones in there that in terms of like how they end up functioning for Mistweaver might be good, but like the Mechanicos, like Soul Glow Spectrometer one is interesting, but it depends on how it probably, unfortunately, not being able to test this one because I'm not Kyrian and you can't have.
I did test this one actually. I tested it for Wardup, actually, was in our PTR group and he was asking me about it. It goes, that's the one that like stacks up to five and then so it goes 0 to 5 and then immediately resets and goes 0 to 5 again. There's no cooldown.
Okay, but does it proc on like REMS? Does it proc on any healing? That's the question. Because if procs on any healing, you do,
I have a monk that's Kyrian on PTR. If you want me to go and test it,
maybe we'll talk about this afterwards. But yeah, that'd be the interesting one for that.
I tested it for damage. I don't think it'll be good for tanks because it either procs on healing or on damage. For Brewmaster in particular, you're actually way more likely to have it proc on yourself because of the steady influx of self healing from Celestial Fortune.
Gotcha. So
you're probably going to actually not want to take that because you won't be able to get damage out of it reliably, and Celestial Fortune actually ignores healing amplification. So,
that's not good.
Yeah. But yeah, it does, like, it's if you're only damaging things, it works out to like a 2.5% damage increase, which is actually a lot for a soulbind trait.
Yeah, no, that sounds, yeah, that's actually big for a single trait. Yeah. So yeah, so I mean, I guess, yeah, some of these are good, these new, they're gonna be good. So it'd be good to like dive into them and see what they'll change. That Knife A one seems ridiculous for anyone, to be fair.
Yes.
Like that's a huge defensive bonus. So but yeah, new soulbind traits.
To be fair. That Night Fae one is only doing those numbers because it's a tank. It will do lower numbers on a healer or a DPS because they're just not getting hit as frequently.
Or as true. Hard. Well, but like on a fight like Council of Blood,
it'll be extremely.
Well, we had Council of Blood, which is where like the majority of the raid, particularly you know after like towards the end of that fight, you spend most of your time below 80%, like, and it's playing catch up, right? So
yeah.
So yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if they nerf that one.
Yeah.
But we didn't get anything around empowered conduits, right? Like I haven't seen anything.
There was a tooltip that popped up for me about it, but there wasn't anything I could do with it. Like one of the help hints on PTR popped up and was like, "This is an empowered conduit," and it was just a regular ass conduit. So I don't know what I was supposed to do with it.
Yeah. Interesting. So yeah, so that was so that's new soulbind traits across the board, which is cool. I don't think, to your point, I don't think they extend this system in 9.2. I think unless they are actually going to add new conduits, I don't think they do that.
I actually, like, if they're going to commit to the system, I think they need to remove, replace, and add new conduits. I don't know that that's the way I want them to go. I would rather get tier sets.
Yeah.
But
no, I agree there, but I will say, we'll see. I hope they, I mean, because at that point they're going to add potentially another 3 and the trees are already massive, right? Like they're big and I don't know. We'll see.
Have you ever seen one of the like forum posts of people like, there's one I remember from way back in the day of someone confusingly asking like, what do I do with my talent points? I've gotten all the talents. Because they were on a small screen and didn't scroll down.
Oh, no, I've not seen that. That's hilarious. That's
the kind of situation that we'll run into if they continue extending the trees down.
Yeah. Hopefully resolutions are better nowadays than they were in classic.
Yeah, but still, that's... Like, actually, like, I have to scroll. I just had the Wowhead one up, and I have to scroll a bunch. I don't think I have to do that in-game. I think the Wowhead one is bigger. But we will hit that point even in game if they keep making them taller.
Yeah, we will. That's for sure. So yeah, so those are, I don't know if there's anything else on soulbinds or covenants in general. There's been no covenant ability changes that I'm aware of.
Covenant legendaries.
Oh yeah, covenant legendaries were the one thing. Sorry, I didn't put that in the notes. But there are no monk ones. So
there are no monk ones yet. Yeah,
but there are covenant specific legendaries coming.
Oh boy, am I not happy about that.
Neither am I. Maybe we can segue this in the next area because I don't, maybe it doesn't hurt as bad. So it sucks. Not a huge fan of covenant specific legendaries because if they're good, like then that's just another layer of something you have to figure out of, is my covenant specific legendary good enough for maybe a covenant that's not as good to bring it up to being better than my current covenant, and do I need to then start to transition? It's like another layer of like, now you have soulbinds, legendaries, covenant specific legendaries, and then covenant abilities. and then, you know, all that sort of layered on top of each other. Even like Soulbind trees themselves, like some classes, because you get two potencies, you know what I mean? Like I run into this with my, one of my holy, the holy paladin in my guild, where he runs Kyrian, so he gains access to two finesse conduits, and that means he can run the freedom movement speed one. And I don't. So then he's like, why aren't you freedom everybody? I'm like, well, it doesn't, I don't increase their speed, so I don't, it's pointless. Anyway, but an aside, so it's just another layer of that, but they are adding Covenant-specific legendaries. Along with that, though, they're removing, well, at least for the upgrades beyond rank 4, there's no Soul Ash requirements on currently on PTR. So there is a different currency, and I don't think they data mine exactly, if, I don't know if they data mine exactly where it comes from.
There's there's like a crafted thing.
Yeah.
So Preach had some testing that he was doing, and there is periodically like a daily that appears, and apparently right now it's not every day. But in the new zone, there's a daily that comes up that gives you a resource, and you take like 15 of those and you give it to a crafter, and they make you an upgrade thing, basically.
Yeah.
That's how it appears to work right now. The daily has only come up like once, maybe twice in the past week, so nobody's actually been able to go all the way through with the whole process yet. But the items are also not bound on pickup, so you can buy them and sell them.
Oh, I did not realize that.
If you have a whole ass load of alts, every time that one of those dailies pops up, like, bam, upgrade one of your legendaries. Just like 14 alts, there we go, new rank.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome. So yeah, so that's, I think that's the one maybe good thing. Is that, you know, at least for the upgrades beyond rank 4. So I think rank 4, up to rank 4, you still require Soul Ash.
Yeah.
Which there's another thing that we might want to talk about real quick about that. But yeah, so Covenant-specific legendaries are coming. There, of course, no monk ones as of now. I actually didn't read if...
Much like there aren't, there weren't monk covenant abilities for the longest time. I would be very surprised if we have monk covenant legendaries before like 2 weeks prior to patch launch.
Exactly. That'll be fun.
But I mean, in my opinion, there's like no good way this can go. Either the covenant legendaries are... There's like three ways this can go, right? Number one, they could all just be like deliberately undershot and just absolute ass. And the only people that make them are the people that are making one of every legendary.
Right.
Like, and if that's that's the way you're doing it, like, why even bother making them?
Yeah. Or some sort of like utility legendary that like works is like an open world, like when you're out and about type buff or whatever it is.
Which, like, we talked a lot last week about how bad open world stuff is. Why would you make a legendary for it?
Yeah. Well, fair.
The second way it can go is that they like deliberately undershoot the power level, but like try and make it so they still like, are appealing in some capacity, and then just fail on one or two of them, and those just like end up defining the way that the spec plays in 9.1. I think that's the most likely thing to happen, is they completely like, they accidentally make Mechagon Bracers again, they accidentally make Font of Power again. It's just something like that is going to happen.
Yes.
And the last possibility is that they're all really good, and then like everybody just uses their covenant legendary, and they just use whatever covenant has the best legendary. Which I think is unlikely, but yeah.
I think
the most likely thing is that they're mostly undershot, but then they miss on a couple, and
yeah. That's I would also land there, where it's like, yeah, they miss on one or two of them for a class, and it just becomes the way you play that class. So
yeah.
So yeah. Gosh, oh man. So I think the only other final thing on legendaries is there has been data mined by WoWhead something called Mega Soul Ash, which no one knows what this is for. I'm assuming this is potentially just some sort of catch-up mechanism where like you...
I love the name though.
Yeah, like Mega Soul Ash, where it's just like a larger Soul Ash cache or whatever that... You can either, it either like drops at the end of Torghast now, and it's sort of how they move up, or it's like something you can purchase with like maybe Stygia or like something like that, right? So nothing other than the name and the fact that it's a currency, I think, that was data mined. Yeah. So more to come there on legendaries. No new legendaries beyond the covenant specific ones. I don't think we'll actually see new legendary powers other than these covenant specific ones, but
I think 9.2, like
Yeah.
Definitely by the end of the expansion, we will get new legendaries. So yeah. Many of the legendaries are so ass. There's like, they got to do something. But then I say that about conduits and look where we are.
Right. And I mean, to be fair, did they add new legendaries in Legion? Mm-hmm. But they added like common ones, right? They didn't add. There was class specific.
There was two batches of new legendaries. There was the class rings.
Okay.
And
but everybody got. They weren't like those. Like, were there like was common. That
like everybody could get. Yeah. And then there was a new batch of like class or spec specific ones. So like Brewmaster's shoulders, the ones that we like the Storm Sound's last keg that we use now, that came out. And I want to say 9.1.5.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, as a Mistweaver, we used like Cephus.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, to be fair, I don't remember any of the Mistweaver ones because I mean, we used Cephus,
Valens, and
we use all the common ones. We use Cephus, the Net Prydaz, and Valens when Valens came out with,
yep,
with whatever, 7.3, 7.2, something like that. So,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Interesting. Well, maybe we'll see more legendaries, class specific ones. But yeah, I think this is all we're gonna get for 9.1, and then we'll see. Yeah, more class.
We would have seen. I think the Covenant specific legendaries are the new legendaries for 9.1, which actually it's a fucking lot of legendaries. Have you like?
I looked. Yeah, it's four
legendaries.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know what Blizzard like. I don't, there's like a part of me where I'm like, you just make too much work for yourself, Blizzard. Like, oh, Blizzrad, you guys need to chill.
Right?
Like just simplify it. Like, I don't think we're gonna
get 48 new bad, useless legends. Or sorry, we're going to get 46 new bad and useless legendaries.
Two.
There's going to be two that are busted as fuck. And they're going to like force, I don't know, all the fucking mages and warlocks to swap to Venthyr or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it. Like, all the other ones are going to be a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. And
it's like, it's been like that repeatedly. Like, that's the thing with Azurite traits. It's the thing with Soulbind traits. It's the thing with legendary, current legendaries.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Maybe one day they'll learn from their mistake.
We'll see. So,
Again, I say that, but we used to get like 36 new tier sets every patch.
No, wow. Yeah, abilities. Yeah, that's true.
We did get 36 new ones every patch, though they were, and we did have this exact problem actually with every single one. It was,
yeah,
you know, 30 of them were bad, two of them were like beyond broken, and like four of them were very, like, there were a bunch that were like just good because they would toss in a stat bonus. It's just like,
right.
This is good because it gives you stats.
I do 6% more healing with this ability. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. I guess it's very, very, very similar from there. So, all right, I guess let's go into a little bit more of the campaign stuff, and then we'll go do campaign, raid, lore, and Corruption 2.0 because it's in there. So real quick on the campaign side of things, I think one of the predictions we had, which we're trying to lay these, I don't think we've done it anywhere else, but you had this prediction that flying was going to be enabled by collectibles, basically having to collect a bunch of different things.
I would call that a prediction. That was like a wish.
Okay, that was a wish. Fair enough. You said it during the prediction show. It became a prediction. Yeah. All right,
that's fair.
But they confirmed that flying is basically unlocked by the campaign, essentially fairly early with some of the wording they got, where it's like literally as soon as you unlock the hub, the new hub area, which is fairly early on in the campaign for 9.1, you get flying, which is cool.
Are you able to fly in the new zone?
No, you can't. Okay, can't fly in the mall. Can't fly in the mall. And then I guess, what is it? Carithia? Carithia, yeah. I think his name is.
Yeah.
Is a part of the mall. So no, you can't fly in the mall at all. Can mount in the mall, but no, it unlocks flying for everywhere, but the Maw and Ouroboros, everywhere else you can fly.
Yeah, and just to like recap real quick our predictions for the class changes, I would say because class changes and tuning tend to happen like later in the PTR cycle,
yeah,
most of these I would still technically call unknown, but so far like we were correct that there were no major Mistweaver changes. Not correct yet, like there's been no Brewmaster changes. I predicted that there would be some tech changes. No Venthyr remake yet.
Yep.
And then no Venthyr like tuning at all, which is what your prediction for
Venthyr. Yeah, my prediction was on Venthyr tuning, yeah. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. I wasn't expecting this first run to have most of that stuff in it. So
yeah, I wasn't either. But
yeah. So cool. So I think now on to sort of, yeah, so that was flying. There's also, which I didn't realize was a new area of the mall unlocking, which is sort of, I guess it's north of the Beast Wardens is where it actually sits. And it's like Helya's like area of the mall, I believe. I'm sorry?
I had no idea. I hadn't seen anything about that yet.
Yeah. So the only reason I looked this up because I had a prediction about this. But in any event, so it's basically north of the Beast Wardens. It opens up and it's where the new entrance to the raid is, which was my prediction was that their actual entrance to the raid was going to be inside Torghast.
Right. And it is not.
It is not. So I definitely got that one wrong. But I think WoW has got a post.
Very, very, I would say give you partial credit here because the raid is very clearly like Torghast themed. The areas that we saw of it, like you could have told me we were in Torghast and I would totally have believed you.
We are.
I mean,
no, it like shows. It's actually Torghast.
Like, okay, it shows.
Yeah, okay. Just so you're aware, it's like it's supposed to be Torghast. Which was funny because so speaking of like just the way that the zone, the at least the raid zone looks, people were also comparing it very much to ICC, which I don't think if people realize, but like when Sylvanas broke the crown and we like looked up at the sky and it was Shadowlands and it's like a mirror of our world.
There was an upside down ICC up there.
But the upside down ICC is Torghast.
Yeah.
So like, of course, Torghast is going to look very similar to ICC in terms of like look, feel and all that type of stuff. So I think I was talking to one of my friends about that. He's like,
it definitely doesn't have the same look and feel as ICC only because there's no snow. No undead.
Okay.
Like, okay. Snow and undead is basically what I remember of ICC.
But the architecture of the building. So like the
very,
the
very
light. Yeah, that part is similar. That's true. Yeah, the mall's not very cold. I mean, it might be cold, but it's not very snowy.
I like, can Venari tell us how warm it is in the mall?
I don't know. Okay, so a little bit of a side. Like, do you think it's cold in the mall? Like, or do you think it's just like...
Right? Because there's like there's a whole segment of Torghast is like this segment specifically. This one's hot.
Right.
Right. So the rest of them are right?
Yeah, but I don't but there's also like the cold depths. Isn't there like a cold hard depths one?
Oh, you're right, there is. So maybe it's just like
that's like the furnace room.
Yeah.
And like there's like the cold, like there's like the ice chest where they keep the meat, or like the freezer section.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, God, I'm such an idiot. I don't remember. Okay. So it's like you have the freezer section of your grocery store. That's the thing. And then you got, you know, those rotisserie chickens that are in like the shelves that are hot.
Yeah.
That's like the hot section of Torghast.
And you're saying that instead of like groceries in these, there's just souls.
There's just souls. So I think it's just normal temp. I think it's probably just probably 68, 70, something like that.
No. It can't be like a pleasant 68 or 70. Like it's going to be normal temp. And by that, I mean, like, 85 and 90% humidity and very swampy.
Do you think that it's optimal?
It's going to be normal temperature.
The ground just looks very hard for it to be that humid. Like, there's no moisture in the ground, I feel like.
We're in the land of the dead. It doesn't have to make sense.
Okay, fair enough. But so yeah, so there is a new area of the mall actually unlocked, and of course with Carithia, right, being the new landmass that they're adding. But yeah, north of the Beast Wardens unlocked. Also, they removed, speaking of the mall, they removed the rep requirements for all the different zones in 9.1, so you don't need to get Venari rep to go to Perdition's Hold, which is a terrible area anyway, and to go to Beast Wardens, which you have to go to Beast Wardens to get to the new raid. So
I'm getting summoned to the raid. Next
I never, year. Dude. I never run to the raid. I'm Venthyr too.
I used to run to Nyalotha because somebody had to do it. Somebody had to figure out which zone it was in.
I feel like the only raid I enjoyed running to was Eternal Palace because the entrance to that was so cool.
Except for all the times that I got stuck. I mean, it didn't happen that often, in fairness, but there were definitely several times that I just got stuck. You know, where it starts to suck you in.
Yeah.
Then take you over to the raid entrance. just like get down to the bottom and it just like, I still have a breath meter and I'm not going anywhere. And I guess I die in 5 minutes.
God, that sucks. Oh man. All right. So I think now, so that's the new zone. Pretty cool. I haven't actually been to Carithia. However you say it.
The only thing I've done as far as raid testing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably jump on there this weekend. Check it out a little bit. So really tomorrow, because we are halfway through the weekend. So yeah, so then on to the raid, I think. Some interesting things of the raid, I think we'll talk about. I only put in our notes that the last two bosses will drop higher eye level loot than everybody else. So I think that's gonna be the standard Blizzard practice from here on out. Last two bosses are whatever, six or some level higher item level. But they did sort of release the full dungeon journal with all the different bosses sort of in the order you have. So yeah, so I think they're, and of course we did raid testing. So the two bosses that were raid tested were the Tara Groove, right?
Tara Groove and Guardian of
the First Ones. The First Ones? Was it Guardian of the First Ones?
Something like that, yeah.
How did it go?
Tara Groove didn't work at first. So they switched us over to Guardian and we did that one, and then we went back to Tara Groove, which was supposed to be like the opposite order, because they're like, Tara Groove is the first boss in the instance, and Guardian of the Last Ones is like sixth or something. I don't know the like which options there are and all of that stuff, because like in theory, like Council of Blood could have been like boss number four that you did, but Council of Blood is not boss number four that you should do. You should definitely not do that.
No,
so like Guardian might be sixth, or it might just be like potentially sixth. It's sixth in the dungeon journal.
Yep.
But that boss is really boring.
Guardian.
Okay. Yeah. Like okay. It's like Sludgefist is a very mechanically simple fight. But it's quick and there's a lot of stuff going on at all times that you have to deal with. And the damage is high and the damage check is high. And that's a fun fight. Guardian, like the damage you take is high, but in really dumb ways. And the damage check is actually like, it seemed high to us, because the way the boss works is he's got an energy bar, and if he hits zero, he does big pulsing raid damage, and he casts an ability that every time he casts it, the raid damage like goes up. And if you look at the numbers on it, it's like, okay, well, we probably don't want him to ever hit zero. That's how we were doing it.
Yeah.
And there are pylons. There are three pylons that you can use to recharge his energy bar. And they give him 60 energy. He starts with 45. And you basically, you want to kill him before he explodes too much. And while he's gaining energy, he does a big, or the pylon does a huge raid AoE. But if you're close to the pylon, it only does 10% of it. 10% of it is like 3k damage per second to the entire raid.
Okay.
So it's like 5k. It's like a lot. It's okay. It's large enough that it is scary and not quite one shot range when you're standing outside of it. So you can take one tick and not get it, but really you should be positioned for it anyway.
Yeah.
But then when the pylon runs out of energy, it just explodes.
Gotcha.
And that's another big raid damage event. Like, that all is fine. He spawns like these sentries that like do a circle around him.
Yeah.
And they shoot things that are nearby every half second for 5k a hit.
Jesus.
So a lot of damage. It like shoots random targets around you. And I just got fucking nuked by them one pull. And I looked at my death log and I just had 10 events of this thing hitting me every half second. And I just died in 5 seconds to being killed by like one melee hit and 50k damage from the sentries. The sentries are like just these floating balls. That's all they do. They float in a circle around the boss. And like if you stand directly under them, it silences you. And they just do damage. Like, and that's the whole fight. That's literally everything about it. There's a tank, little tank combo, but it's like none. It doesn't matter. It's just taunt on it. Like, that's the whole fight. But it turns out you can actually take some of the raid AoEs from him hitting zero. So I saw people saying that they did it with, like, they would let him to get to zero and they would drag him in before the first cast, or like they would let the first cast go off and then drag him in. So like you can have that happen, which would lead you to like overheal the fight and then just like not worry about the damage check. So like, I don't know. Yeah. The boss seems really boring.
That's fair.
Then there's the Terror group. This is the one with the animal powers.
Yeah, and I heard it's like it's super trolly. Super trolly.
Okay, so you don't get real anima powers. I gotta get that out there first. You do not get real anima powers. There is no corrosive dosage in Shadows of Domination.
Which I figured, like, they're not gonna give, like, there are certain, like, a healer with, like, healers with corrosive dosage, you would just, like, we would do a ton of damage as Mistweavers, right?
Yeah.
Because everyone in the raid would have. Yeah.
But the, so basically there's this small pool of like Terror Groove specific anima powers. Okay. And you can get four. And there are pylons around that let you reset, like clear your anima powers, and you can go around and click them again to get new ones. So you can, if you want, like if you have assigned people to do different things,
yeah,
then you can like keep resetting your anima powers until you get the one you want. There's not that many anima powers, so you should relatively reliably be able to get one that you want.
Okay, cool.
And pro tip, you can drag the things that drop the anima orbs to wherever you want. So before you kill them, you can just drag them all next to a pylon. And then, like, if you want people to be able to reset and do their thing, like, they can do that. They can just, like, click reset, channel the thing, and then go and click all of them again. I don't think that's actually going to be necessary because, again, it is the first boss of the instance. But there are some very trolly anima powers. You are correct. There are two in particular that are banned. Like, never take these. Do not ever, ever take these.
Oh, God.
The first one. You are bigger. You do more damage. And you knock people away that get too close.
That's amazing.
Yes. Except there's a mechanic in the fight where the entire raid has to stack together in a small area. And if you walk into it, you're going to kill people.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
The second one. I don't actually know what the upside on this one is at all. All I know is that when you die, you stun the entire raid for 10 seconds. Do not take that under any circumstances.
I bet you. I wonder if it's like a damage buff one. I wonder if
I'm sure it is. Most of them are, but do not take that one. There are multiple mechanics in this fight that can very easily, like if people don't soak for it, for example, kill you.
Oh Jesus, that's awesome.
And if it happens at a bad time, like that's just a raid wipe. That's we had that happen on a couple of pulls. We killed the Terror Groove. It's only heroic, so we killed the Terror Groove, and but we had a bunch of people with those powers, and we just like stopped and just said, "Go take off your powers. Like, I don't even care if you get new ones. Just go take those ones off."
Yeah. Just clear yourself. That's funny.
So the Terror Groove fight itself is actually like way more complex and interesting than the Guardians.
That's what I want, and I wonder if Guardians might just be a. Like, to your point, might just be like a Sludge Fist patchwork style fight.
It's way worse than Sludge Fist.
Right, but maybe it's just supposed to be one of those like simple, like high damage, high healing sort of.
Which, like, as an aside, part of the reason like Sludge Fist is fun is like all the damage is physical. Like, as a tank, part of the reason Sludge Fist is fun is all the damage is physical.
Yeah.
So all the damage is something I can do things about. There's a bunch of magic damage in Guardian, and I don't like it.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think. And I know that for like, I think I like Sludge Fists just because of the quickness of it, right? Like it's the type of fight where it's an execution fight. So like you do everything you need.
We have a prediction. I had a prediction on here that we wouldn't have spell queuing and push timer stuff in the new raid. Already proven incorrect because on Guardian, his ability timers were changing depending on when you charged him.
Oh.
Sinzu was saying some things in Peak about how they thought it was based on crossing different thresholds on his energy bar or the amount that he had drained. So like once he's drained like 40 energy, he does a thing, except that while he's being charged up, he stops draining energy entirely. Like while he's being charged, he doesn't drain. So you can totally change the spell timers. By draining him a different.
Does that really count as spell?
Because we were trying to do so. Like we had one pull, and we were like, we dragged him in to charge him up, and we had the mechanic happen, and we're like, we should wait until after that mechanic happens in order to drag him in so that we can, you know, not have it happen while we all have to be stacked in this small circle. So we waited the next bowl and waited and waited.
Oh no.
And then it just like finally happened when he had like 3 energy left. He stood there casting. We just like couldn't get him in the circle before he died. Yeah. And like,
gotcha.
So I think it does count. It's definitely not That's as fair. Bad as like generals or council thing. Like it's not a damage stop. It's more of a, like you can drag him into a circle at specific points in time to manipulate his ability timers. I just don't think that actually manipulating the ability timers like this has, like, I've never experienced it being a fun and interesting mechanic. Like, it's just something that there is some set of timers that is so much easier than everything else that you always do that, and if you fuck it up, it's a wipe.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But yeah, okay, so that prediction, I'm counting it as a
hard. Yeah, that's, I'll let you have it for now. Okay.
Okay.
For now.
But the character, back to the character, is actually way better.
Yeah.
So there's a few different mechanics that interact with your anima powers. There's soaks that come up periodically, and somebody's got to stand in them and take a bunch of debuffs. While the thing is up, it actually buffs the Terra Gru. So like there's one that increases his physical damage dealt by 25%. And there's 5 stacks, and so you drain it, and every stack that you drain removes 5%.
Okay.
And draining a stack puts a debuff on you that makes you take 10% increased physical damage. And if you're a brewmaster, you're already thinking, Angry Dave. And I'm happy to report, yes, you can. Nice. But there's also an anima power that periodically will remove debuffs from you.
Oh.
It also grants, like, it'll periodically, like, make you take 99% reduced damage for 3 seconds and then remove a debuff from you. So you can have the people that have that anima power do the soaking, because the debuffs have like a 3-minute duration or something otherwise.
Yeah.
And they're not magic debuffs, so you can't dispel them. So you basically say, okay, if you have that anima power, that's you really do the cool. soaking.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I actually think it's a pretty neat design. And there's other stuff, like there's the Terra Gru is going to like periodically like target someone with chains, and people got to like get in a line and soak the chains so that the person targeted doesn't die.
Gotcha, but
if you soak the chain, you get stunned. But there's an anima power that makes you immune to stuns.
Okay.
The tank buster also stuns you. So that's another one that, like, when I saw that there was a tank buster that stunned you, I was very not pleased. But it's okay, because it's, for one thing, it's just a 3-second stun. So your co-tank just, like, taunts and it's fine, and 3 seconds later, you're good to go. Or you can take that anima power that makes you immune to stuns and just never have to worry about it. One of the other major mechanics is that I don't know if it's health thresholds or timer based. I didn't pay that much attention to it because it's honestly pretty easy. The floor turns black. You stand in the little glowy spot. And there's other ones that look sort of like the glowy spot, but aren't glowing as much. They're like blank, but not glowing.
Oh, okay.
And you stand in one, and something slams you and you die. You don't literally die. Bunch of damage.
Yeah.
But you stand in the glowy spot. It's fairly small, and this is where that knockback thing comes in. You really need to not take that power, because you can knock people out of the circle. It's going to be fun and like normal and heroic when you can just troll people and do it.
But on mythic, probably not.
Yeah, definitely would avoid it. When you're first clearing the instance and just trying to make progression, like, don't take that power. Awesome. And then at the end. One more thing. His, like, the amount of health he has and the amount of damage that he deals is actually, like, higher than, or it was higher than Guardian. And the reason is the anima powers. A bunch of the anima powers have, like, a bunch of extra health or extra damage tacked onto them. Like,
gotcha.
I had one that was, you deal 30% increased damage and healing, but can't jump. Mm-hmm. You don't need to jump on any mechanic in the fight. So it's just literally 30% more damage.
At least on any mechanic you know of, right? Mythic only mechanic could be
not heroic.
Jumping.
So that is something like you need to actually care about the anima powers to some degree. But since the pool is fairly small, and like there was those two that I think are just straight trolling.
The dead one seems so good, because then you just get everybody with the stun immune one.
Oh my god, you broke it.
Then you're fine.
I had might have a list up by this point, but
I didn't see anything they posted. Yeah, but
at 10%, he removes all of your anima powers.
Cool.
And deals 500% increased damage. And stops all other mechanics.
Jesus.
So, pro tip, you get one shot through Stagger and Fort Brew. You cannot tank him at that point. You kite him. You literally run away from the terror group.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which, awesome. On the one hand, I think it's very thematic and kind of, I see what they were going for, and it does work, because basically what we did is me and my co-tank stood on opposite ends of the room and ping-ponged him across.
That's so funny.
What we actually did on our kill is my co-tank warrior leaped around for a bit, taking it, and then ran out of stuff, and I taunted it. And then I got pre-scripted into the terror group on accident.
That's awesome.
It was okay, because at that point, the boss is at 0.5%. So yeah. It is it's a fairly neat mechanic. I think it's kind of cool. But also, I'm really tilted that they spent the past 5 years taking things away from tanks because of the kiting meta in Legion Mythic Plus.
Yeah.
And adding a bunch of dumb stuff like the Fervent Strike mechanic, where mobs hit whatever the closest target is, and all sorts of dumb stuff like that.
And then put it in a raid boss.
Raid boss, where the last 10%, the intent is literally that you kite it.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I think it's cool to do in a raid, but yeah, I can get the idea that it sucks that they've taken that away from me for the past couple of years, right?
I think the Terror Guru is actually a very good fight. I think a lot of the concerns that people had about there being a fight with anima powers, when we were still thinking, possibly real anima powers, that would have been really problematic. With what it actually is, I think it's a fairly neat fight, and definitely a good first fight. It's going to be kind of a pain to pug because, people have to know not to take the death power. At least on normal and probably heroic, you can just power through someone dying. But the knockback power, just don't.
That's fair. That's awesome. Yeah, I unfortunately didn't get a chance to raid test. I saw a couple of videos that my guild posted of some of the kills and some of the pulls. So I really watched more of the Guardians than I did of Terror Gru. So
I think Guardian is a confusing one.
Yeah, I didn't really understand. I saw the orbs floating around. I saw them moving bosses, different groups.
They literally just float in a circle around the boss. And if you move the boss, they have some delay, but then they just move back into, they have a slow, they'll slowly change trajectory and move back into a circle around him.
Yeah, they reminded me of Algalon orbs. You never did that, but yeah, Algalon orbs. Sorry. I don't know why I'm sorry. They just reminded me of that. Okay. So that's, I think, interesting. Yeah. So it'd be cool to see more of these. I think, as always, Blizzard sort of generally nails it with their raid stuff. So, So I want to take a slight break from our hitting these patch stuff and talk a little bit about the lore of everything. So, real quick for people who are listening, maybe live or who are listening, on the podcast, I'd probably just maybe skip ahead 5-10 minutes.
There'll be a timestamp in the actual, the podcast and YouTube video when they go up. We'll have timestamps on it. So you can just skip ahead. If you want to skip spoilers, because spoilers are about.
Yeah. So we'll hit two big spoilers that came out. And I'll probably, so we'll hit first the Primus one and then we'll hit the Sire Denathrius one. So first up with Primus, basically the identity of Primus is revealed, or the Primus is revealed. If you guys are not familiar, the Primus was, I described it as collecting a bunch of mannequin parts for our doll and dressing, playing a little dress up with our doll when you do the Maldraxxus campaign. But the Primus has been identified just through some text and some, I think some zone yells as the Rune Carver. Which of course is the large chained up gentleman or lady. I don't know if they have a gender, if they identify as anything, any event, that is sort of bound up and creates legendaries for us. So they are the Primus. And you get to see his like real person figure at one point, I think.
He looks like one of like Thoth or whatever from the Warcraft 3 games, like the cultists.
Yeah.
The necromancers.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It looks like some of the necromancers from the
really Warcraft interesting stuff. Way to go about it, because those like taking like the yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that one. But it's a very major change from the large person that's chained up to this like what appears to be fairly small, like hunched over,
like old little man. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I think that's, I, so to be fair, I don't know how, like it's big from a lore wise, just knowing the identity, but I assume we figure out a little bit more about why that's so important, because like if the Primus is the rune carver, then the assumption is that the jailer already has their signia, right? The Maldraxxus signia, because doesn't the Primus have that one, or no?
I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe. But then there's also like, I mean, that's how Anduin got his new Runeblade, right? Is yeah. The Primus, basically.
Which is weird. Weird.
Yeah.
That he's helping. But in any event, we know the identity of the Primus. I guess we'll know more about all how that ticks and ties. But the bigger news is the Denathrius news, which apparently, Emelson, you didn't know about this. So we're going to drop.
Yeah.
So this is I huge. Saw
the,
so, oh,
I saw the thing about there being more Dreadlords. Like, I was like, okay, more Dreadlords. I saw a headline about there being Denathrius stuff, but I hadn't looked at it yet.
Yeah, so the Denathrius stuff is spicy. So essentially, what they've done is they've placed Denathrius as the leader of the Nethrazim.
Ooh.
Which is massive. So, and a couple people, and I actually went back and watched a little bit of Noble Lore Extraordinaire, posted a video a couple months ago just on Side of Denathrius in terms of that. And in that video, he makes some very clear things that like, Denathrius sort of looks like a Nethrazim, not as bulky, right? But just in sort of shapes and mannerisms, even like the clothing and armor and stuff, like him and some of the court in Revendreth look like Nethrazim. So yeah, they have positioned Sire Denathrius as leader of the Nethrazim, and they've data mined a conversation that he has with the one and only Mal'Ganis. So Mal'Ganis is coming back. They're getting the band back together. So it's all coming full circle. And then I watched a pretty in-depth video about this from Noble. And what the idea is that it's essentially the Nethrazim, not the old gods or the Titans, that are sort of like corrupting and making all these changes. Essentially, the Nethrazim are placing leaders in each of the five or six different houses. Or
let me stop you here. Is this just like interdimensional gerrymandering? Or like their power scales with the number of people that are in their area, and they're just like shunt all the people into the realm of death. Hell yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. Interdimensional gerrymandering. Got it.
I think that's what it's doing. Cause what they did is they basically said that, like, I guess the lore video was that they've sort of tried to implant people at the head of each of the five or six different cosmic forces, right? So it's like an intercosmic war that's going on between like the Nethrazim and the Titans and all this type of stuff. In any event, the big news is, of course, Denathrius is the leader of the Nethrazim, which is interesting to me from a story perspective, because Blizzard made it a point to say that, like, originally Denathrius was supposed to have a small part in all of this, but because they like the voice actor so much, they're like, let's give him a bigger part. Like, that's a massive fucking part to go like, hey, I'm just gonna be a raid boss in the first tier of this instance, to like, I'm the leader of the Nethrazim.
It's kind of a big deal.
Like, that's a fucking huge promotion. That's like going from like, hey, like, I work at the help desk at like the Apple store to like, oh, I'm Tim Cook's right-hand man. Like, I'm COO of Apple now. Like, that's like the jump.
Also, so if they liked the voice actor for Denathrius so much, like, where's Remornia's voice actor? Because like, Remornia's voice actor sold it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. So, in any event, that is the big story. And I think, so this sort of goes into my idea of like, what is the big bad, right?
Yeah.
So like last week, if folks remember, hopefully you don't, because we were well off, is my prediction was that Sylvanas was, of course, not the final boss of this raid. It was which she is, so I was wrong there. Which it was actually going to be the jailer, which it's not, so I was wrong there. And the fact that when we kill the jailer, we're going to release Anduin, aka Lich King 2.0, on the world, and he's actually going to be the big bad of this expansion. I think I'm well off at this point. I think Anduin still has the...
You're wrong about that last one yet, though.
That's true, but I don't think... So, based on this Denathrius piece, I don't believe Anduin ever becomes the big bad. I believe he is a raid boss at a certain point. I think we fight him in a raid or, you know, over multiple fights, or he's a part of a fight, whatever it ends up being. I think the big bad is now the fact that the Dreadlords are sort of pulling strings intercosmetic, dimensionally. I said cosmetic, intercosmic dimensionally, interdimensional cosmic forces.
Interdimensional gerrymandering.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's huge. I mean, that's huge. Like, for someone who does not know much or care about the lore, it's actually interesting to me, this sort of idea. Because this gets back to, like, if they actually make this work in terms of, like, the Warcraft 3 story, which is the last time I cared about a World of Warcraft story, I am fucking excited. Because, like, if the Dreadlords were, like, actually, like Denathrius, they were thinking about this all the way back then, we sort of get a little bit more behind, like, why they had Lich King do what they were doing, and sort of this idea of, like, and so it ties to everything. There was stuff, it ties to the shorts that were given for Maldraxxus, where, like, it's Garona, right, is stealing, like, plans from the Nethrazim, Maldraxxus, and things like that. So it's cool that this is starting to kind of tick and tie. I don't know enough to think like maybe they're doing a little retconning as they do this, which sort of, if they're doing it, and it's been like 20 years since Warcraft 3 came out, so, like, fine, rewrite the story slightly to make it work today in my mind, but it's cool. So that's the big spoilery news, is that Denathrius is the leader of the Nethrazim, who, of course, are, for folks who don't know anything about this, it's all the Dreadlords, essentially. So we get new Dreadlord models, we get female Dreadlord models, which I think are new.
Those are new.
They're making a big deal about that.
And I wonder what implications this has for, like, that Lightforged Nethrazim.
Yeah. Which, like, so he, that's what they're saying. They think he's a plant, along with what's the shadow legendary? Begins with an X. What?
Zalatav?
Yeah. They think that's actually a plant too. Cause that takes care of shadow. We have death in Denathrius. You have the Lightforged being, and then they think other leaders of Revendreth figure into the other cosmic forces in terms of plants.
Interesting.
It's crazy. It's crazy, dude. The people that think so.
I mean, we're really, like, a little bit into, like, lizard men level conspiracy theory stuff with
That's true. I mean, to be fair, we are. But, like, I think it's, I don't know. I don't, for someone who, like, has not, who does not care generally much about the story in most games that I play, I will tell you, considering the game I play the most, it's cool that it's actually interesting to me now. And maybe it should have been interesting before this, but, like,
I credit the lore by Anom episode for getting
it. To be fair, actually, that's, like, the first time in probably any expansion ever, or portion of the game ever, that I read more about the quests and actually watched videos. So, yeah. But, yeah, so big spoiler news there. I don't know if there's anything on your mind, your thoughts about this one. It'd be fun.
I mean, aside from just repeating the interdimensional gerrymandering gag, which is going to be a running theme, if that's actually what the story ends up being, by the way, that, like, in order for them to take power, they, like, just need to have more souls in their realm.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it sounds, when you say it like that, it sounds like, ooh, ominous. When you call it interdimensional gerrymandering, and you think of Denathrius as, like, a washed up corrupt politician that's, like, redrawing districts so that he has more souls in his than in, you know, Azeroth or whatever.
Yeah.
It loses a lot of punch.
That's fair. I guess the only other lore character, too, that makes an appearance is Hellscream.
Yes.
So we haven't seen Hellscream since the original opening, was it Afterlife episodes where they did they did one on each of the covenants, and he was in, of course, the Revendreth covenant. He was, like, their anima battery person. So he makes an appearance in one of the boss fights, in terms of, I think it's the Soul Render boss fight, which we haven't tested yet, but according to the Dungeon Journal, there are some Garrosh Hellscream type abilities in there where he is like summoned, or I don't know, you watch stuff happen to him. So there's speculation that like maybe he becomes a larger character after this, after we defeat this boss, or he might just end up doing the Queen of Jara thing, which is like thank us and say peace, which she did after Dinesh. Fucking soccer boss, the worst boss in Iolitha.
Yeah,
wipe into that.
So I mentioned earlier to you before we started recording, I got more stuff done on prog stats this week.
Yeah,
one of the things I've been working on is getting it working with older raids. And it's like 90% there.
But, oh, nice.
Zanesh is you know how on Stone Legion Generals it's got like those horizontal lines? Like,
yeah,
that's Stone Legion Generals is just like horizontal line because you're not actually making any real progress on the fight. You're just trying to make the timers line up the way you want.
Yeah.
Zanesh also just has a horizontal line. Like, it's just a horizontal line and then you kill it.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's just like probably one of the best indicators of the boss fight fucking blows is horizontal line and then you kill it.
Yeah. Yeah. God, dude. That's hilarious. But yeah, so Hellscream, lore-wise, does make an appearance. I didn't really read about this one, so I don't know much about exactly what's coming in.
I don't think we know much beyond just he shows up in the boss fight and we are not fighting him directly. Like, we're not fighting him. But it's not just a repeat of the Kael'thas fight either.
No, no, we fight like his controller, whoever has him locked up, right?
Yeah.
His guard. So cool. So I think that ends our spoiler section. So we'll timestamp this one. You can come back. Welcome back, those who care a lot about the story and don't want to be spoiled, just like me, kind of. Not at all. So cool. So I think the final topic for this, at least it's stuff that we can cover, because I know we haven't talked about the new mega dungeon, but to be fair, other than the dungeon journal and a couple items, nothing really has been posted.
Yeah.
But the final thing, Corruption 2.0, is what I like to call it, is we are getting gemmed cloaks. Or, what's up?
Which are actually a lot closer to the gems from Mists of Pandaria.
That's to be fair.
Touch to gems.
Yeah. So, essentially, there are cloaks. I think there's two cloaks that have this ability in the raid. Basically, that drop in the raid. That the ability to be empowered and unlock a gem slot. At which point you can place a specific gem into that gem slot to gain some fun abilities. So they're kind of boring, I guess you could say. But in any event, there is one for each role. There's a DPS gem you can slot in. There's a tank gem. There's a healer gem. Currently, the three that are there is the healer one just gives you more primary stat when you heal someone. The tank one heals you if you take magic damage. And the DPS one, are you sharing your screen?
No, I'm not. Hang on, I've got it pulled up and...
So there was previously data mined like a bunch of crazy, like, I guess, not crazy ones, but ones called like Unbound Pestilence and things like that. But yeah, the new shards, if you scroll down, they actually have the new shards. So the two cloaks are there as placeholders, but these new data mine shards here in the middle, scroll up a little bit. It's not these bottom ones. Those are the old ones. So it's these like new, not as exciting ones are what they believe are going to be empowering your cloaks as you drop them in. I believe is what Ian, so we talked about this in the other episode about the predictions, is Corruption 2.0 coming? Ian talked about taking something from the realm of domination and empowering an ability and you'll get more power. Thanks. That's my Ian impression.
These all look really bad.
Yeah.
You're gonna
equip the cloak.
You're gonna equip this gem. Yeah, it's gonna be good. It's just not interesting. So these new ones all look really boring. I am not at all excited to have any of them, like, and I'm gonna be totally honest, I'm just using the DPS one. I'm not using the tank one.
Yeah,
Tanquan has to be doing a lot of healing before I will look at it.
Yeah.
And these better not be spec locked. If these are spec locked, like essences were, like, I don't know, fucking envy.
Yeah.
So the old ones look a lot more interesting. I'm wondering if these ones, like, are these the old ones? Or are these, like, partially implemented new ones and we're going to have, like, multiple for each role?
Potentially. I mean, maybe. I don't foresee Blizzard doing this just because for items like this, right, they're pretty straightforward and they want you to take one of the thing for whatever role you're doing, right? So yeah, the idea of giving you multiple choices just for these gems, I don't think so. I think we end up with maybe the new ones are just new data mine ones. They were like testing things, right? They could be misaligned, miss bad data, right? We've seen that in the past. So but yeah, I think
these old ones are a lot more interesting. Like, they have multiple ranks. You rank them up over the course of the tier, I assume. Yep. And like the healer one is your helpful abilities send a swarm of locusts to protect absorbing 50% of an amount of damage that they take within 10 seconds and chains up to 3 nearby allies. Can only occur once every 30 seconds and has a 25% chance to cast twice. And okay, like there's just a lot of text here. Automatically cast on a nearby ally every 60 seconds when your ally is fully healed. It will attack a nearby enemy instead, dealing some amount of damage. That's a lot of text. I can see them not wanting to go that crazy because that's like, that is, of course, the culmination of five abilities in just every rank, or culmination of five ranks. Yeah. Every rank is just adding new things to it, right?
Which is cool.
Yeah. And I think this is a lot more interesting, but at the same time, like, this is not really any more interactive than healing an ally below 30% health increases your primary stat. In fact, healing an ally below 30% health increases your primary stat is actually more interactive.
Yeah. Yeah, which is like, I mean, well, I don't know if I'd say it's more interactive. It's more beneficial.
It is interactive though, because like you have to then be looking for targets. I mean, obviously, if you're a good healer, you're looking for low HP targets to heal. But like this is a thing where like you heal a low HP target and like you play whack-a-mole with those low HP targets and you get a lot of extra primary stat versus just like it's a proc that happens. And
so healers don't do that, like. The majority of a lot of healers' healing comes from untargeted random AoE abilities. Yeah, so, like, the idea that you're gonna
get it from healing rain or flow or essence fall. Okay, yeah,
which is like less interactive. Like, it's unless it only procs from like single target heals, then you're right. So, which I mean, I would hope there's multiple ranks here, but. I mean, the other thing too is that they couldn't figure out how to scale these, right? And the idea would be is like, you'd want these cloaks to potentially, well, so we're not in the final tier. So like these have to have a cap. And maybe the idea was like, it was too much from a timeline perspective, because this wasn't the final tier to say like, all right, you have to do this thing to gain access to a gem to a gem slot, right? And then you actually have to get the gem to put in it and then you have to upgrade the gem. So like,
I mean, yeah. Yeah, because it would be very difficult for like the stats on a cloak to outscale these, unless the cloak it's on just has no other stats, right? Because like if these just take up a cloak slot basically, and you have one of these really powerful gems on it, like you just wear this cloak next tier.
Yeah, which is why they'd have to cap it. Yeah,
in the new tier.
That's fair. Yeah,
which they could do, but. People don't like it when that. I mean, I guess that's actually not precedent because tier sets exhibit exactly that problem. Because how many tiers do people wear like 2x2x2 or 2x4?
Yeah, 2x4. Yeah. Sets. Yeah, and so I mean, that's why I think these might have been number one, something just to simplify doing it this way, right? And number two, gets rid of like the requirement or like the timeline to acquire, because like the other thing is like you don't want. I think these ranks, right? If you got a rank every week, or like even within a week, you got one or two ranks, you're not utilizing it, right? So it becomes like there's no point in having ranks at that point. If you're getting them so quickly that you don't get a chance to actually use the rank you're on, then it doesn't matter, right? What the actual thing is. So
also, these are tied to an item, apparently an item drop from the raid.
Yeah, they're boss. Like. Yeah, the boss shards or something, power up soul shards.
So
I'm assuming you kill more and more bosses, you get more and more of these shards, you upgrade your cloak to then get a gem, and then maybe you can upgrade the gem from there. I don't know. We'll see. But I believe this is that system that Ian was talking about.
Before you pointed out that, like, that's the old ones.
Yeah, yeah. It was exciting when you're like, damn, locust swarm. Or, like, I don't even know what the tank one was, but it was like, yeah. The
tank one was bloodworms, basically.
Okay, bloodworms, yeah.
Actually, like, at rank 5, or rank 4 and rank 5, it actually, everything after rank 3, it would have been, like, totally fine. Rank 1 and rank 2 were going to be really annoying because they just drop puddles on the ground that you would have to like go and soak to get healed from them. And like, if it's one thing your melee love, it's when the boss randomly walks through you because you sidestep to soak a puddle.
Yeah, exactly.
But after rank 3, like once you hit 5 puddles, they turn into a bloodworm, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the old ones are cool. I just think they might have, number one, not been able to balance them right, or saving them for an end of expansion thing where you have to like work your way up to this and it's a longer acquisition sort of phase. So but yeah, this is, I think, Corruption 2.0. this was sort of the system Ian was referencing, I believe, in that famous Forbes article that I don't know how famous it is outside of us, but we reference it all the time.
I mean, this is definitely like, I think, not Corruption 2.0, it's just like that system. But I either set of the gems that we just looked at, I would be happy, like way happier to get than anything Corruption. Like, they are not even they're way more like what we had in MOP than they are that.
I forgot about the Shaw Touch gems.
How did that work? I didn't actually raid in MOP. I like knew about the things, but like, so there was the Shaw Touched weapons, and then did the new raids just not drop the Shaw Touched weapons, or did you get
you got new gems? Yeah, I'm pretty sure you got new gems, and at which point the weapons, like, because you got a new gem, you wanted to use it with the new weapon, so that's why you'd upgrade. And then eventually, so the way it worked was you could add a gem to a new weapon. You could actually gem slot to a new weapon, and then it could put a gem in it. So you ended up upgrading anyway, because while the gem didn't change, the stats on the weapon changed. So you want the more
stats.
It's
like they could do that again. I mean, if we want to do like big and fancy gems here, we could just like carry them forward and hope that none of them are too annoying. But that does also run into the issue that we ran into in BFA of just systems bloat, where we had, Azurite, Essences, Corruption, and like a bunch of random nonsense gear from stuff like Mechagon. Just all smushed together that like just completely broke things in multiple different ways. Like in Eternal Palace, 60%+ of Brewmaster damage came from items and essences and Azurite effects.
Yeah.
Not actually like pressing your buttons.
Yeah, which I think we're gonna end up in that sort of situation in perpetuity, right? I think the way that Blizzard is designing a lot of their systems is that there's just a lot of power in what they've put in, which is just their design methodology nowadays, or, you know, ethos, whatever you want to call it, right? Is sort of adding these things on top of the classes that are already there, which, I mean, it's their prerogative for how they design the game. It's just, it dilutes, I think everybody talks about this, but it dilutes the actual underlying class. Because like what you press or what you do doesn't matter. And like, you're defined by the things that potentially make you different.
Yeah, like one thing I've been doing recently to try and get better parses is I've been trying to pick up some of the items specifically from Plaguefall, because Plaguefall has a bunch of really good items, like the Pockstorm weapon and like several of the trinkets. But the difference between like a Pockstorm and a regular weapon is actually like 1%, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I want it because that's 1%. And I mean, you add up a bunch of 1%, and that's the difference between getting an orange parse and a pink parse or a gold parse.
Right.
But it's not like looking at my damage breakdown and going, 20% of my damage just came from essences.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that's a lot more healthy. I think it, like, the magnitude of this stuff does matter. And I think stuff like Poxstorm, you can look at how people still seek out those weapons, even though the effect is fairly small. And I don't, that just seems like it's better to me than essences in particular. Essences, I think, were just a really bad system on every level.
No, I'd agree there too. I think there's a difference though with like gear and like something that's just inherent to your character, right? Like I wouldn't consider essences like getting a weapon like with a specific proc on it or a trinket or something like that.
In Eternal Palace, the raid weapon for monks had a proc on it that was like 5 or 6% of your damage.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, I think BFA is a terrible example for how they should have designed the game, but yeah. That's fair. But I mean, this new thing doesn't seem too bad. If they go back to the, like, look, man, if they just keep taking MOP systems, maybe next year we'll get a legendary cloak and you can put one of these gems in it and you upgrade it. Maybe
have a legendary cloak.
Maybe
you want it.
But maybe with this legendary cloak, it procs a celestial for everyone. Maybe. God, that was such a good system. I have a funny clip on my like from when I was progressing Garrosh, and I was actually tanking Garrosh then, and I got hit by one of the rolly things and my cloak procced, and like literally I get hit, I get knocked back, I go back in, don't say anything, and my raid leader, like probably like 5-6 seconds later, goes, did your cloak just proc? And I was like no, it's what, when did that happen? And so, and then I literally died like 2 minutes later. It was the cheat death.
Okay, it was a cheat death.
Yeah. So yeah, so very, that was
very visible that your cheat death proc. Very much preferable to having your cheat death proc and kill 5 people, as can happen with the Shard of Alar trinket from this year.
That's so good.
The very few trinkets in the game that is better in the LFR version.
That's funny. That's hilarious.
I think that about wraps up what we have so far to talk about. Yeah. With 9.1, hopefully we'll have more raid testing this coming week, and can start getting some more info on some of these other bosses, as well as, fingers crossed, class changes.
Yes,
cross our fingers. There we go.
Yeah, I was like, why are you doing like the?
I went to do it. I don't know. My fingers are stiff.
That's fair.
This hand's
fair. You gotta wiggle them out. You know, jazz hands.
Jazz. But I think that means it is time for Q&A.
It is time for Q&A, and I forgot to ask for questions, but of course...
Anzaru's got us covered.
Dude, Blazeroo, honestly, on point.
Blazeroo now?
I do. He pinged me, actually, when he changed it. So, dude, I love it. Dude, Blazeroo, you're the boy. I should start calling them Anzaru. Be like, hey, Anzaru, thanks for the question. But in any event, Anzaru's got a question for us. But before I get into their question... you can send your questions over to Emelson or myself. We would love to get them. We will answer them. We always used to say that we don't have limits. We have limits. They are there. There are things we will not answer for, you know, just reasons. But most questions we will answer. And of course, Anzaru always has very good questions. And so to this week, Anzaru asks, what do you consider your Power Rangers series?
I did not watch Power Rangers growing up.
So I can tell you that when I read this question, I didn't know there was more than one Power Rangers series.
I did know that.
I thought there was only one with the original cast. You know, you had the...
Yeah. So Power Rangers is based on this Japanese show called Saiten or something like that. I don't know. But it is literally just a dub over a Japanese show.
Oh, really?
The original Power Rangers. Like, the later ones, I don't know. But the original Power Rangers was, they had the rights for this...
That's so
this awesome. Super Saiten, or whatever it is, show from Japan. And they had the broadcast rights in the United States. And they didn't know what was being said.
That's so awesome.
So they just dubbed over it.
I did always. So did they dub all of it?
That's the original series. And like the original series was like early 90s.
So I watched the one that at least the like the actual Power Rangers spoke English, and that was not dubbed. So that was when they had an English cast. But however, I believe like the bad guy in that one might have, I don't know, maybe in any event, I didn't realize there was a series before that. So I watched the one with the original like yellow, pink, blue, red, yellow, pink, blue, red. What was the other color? Yellow, pink, green? Blue, red. It wasn't green because green was Tommy. And Tommy, so, okay, here's my beef with, okay, the original Power Rangers, whatever, that was the only one that mattered. But my beef with that Power Rangers was that there was this character named Tommy, okay? Tommy got to be, oh, the Black Ranger. Okay, so there's actually two beefs. Number one, it was extremely racist. The Yellow Ranger, what ethnicity do you think the Yellow Ranger was, Emelson?
Asian.
She was Asian, all right? What ethnicity do you think the Black Ranger was?
Black.
Yep, African-American. So and the Red Ranger, the leader, was a white blonde kid. So in any event, super racist in terms of casting. The other problem with it was Tommy. So there was this character named Tommy, all right, which was not a part of the original five. He was a different one. Tommy got to be every fucking color under the sun in terms of Power Rangers. He was the Green Ranger. He was the White Ranger. I think at one point he was the Black Ranger and the Red Ranger. Like, he got to be every fucking ranger. And Tommy had like that early 90s like slick back hair into a ponytail. Or not even a ponytail, but it was like the part where you take the top and just put the top in a ponytail, and then there's like long hair in the back. I don't have hair to show you. But you know, it's like the top is in a So Tommy was an asshole, and I hated Tommy because he was like good and bad, good and bad, good and bad. Never keep it straight. But that was my Power Rangers, was that one. The monsters was fucking cool because like they came from the moon, which I thought was just wild. And like the bad guy would just make these clay figurines, be like, "Go, my pretty," and then like it followed the trope of like then the monster would come down out of the clay. They'd fight him as a little one, and then like all of a sudden he would just like figure out that he can grow to be the size of Godzilla, and then that's when the morphing thing, the Zoidborgs, the Megazoids came. And they always were like, we'll fight them independently. And then like, oh, we'll be a team and then we'll crush them. I had a Power Rangers thing that fit together. Like I had all five pieces. It was super cool. And then my sister broke.
I have seen a couple of episodes because it's, I imagine most people that grew up in that era have seen at least a few episodes of the show because it was just on TV.
That's all you did back then was watch TV. Like there was nothing else to do.
I mean, I only had so much time that I was allowed to play video games.
That's true.
I don't really have strong opinions on it other than I think it is really funny that they just like for the original season it was just a Japanese show that they had so the good. Rights for, and they just like just dubbed over it, and it then became this like huge franchise.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I mean, to be fair, there are better versions of Americans dubbing over Japanese television shows, like they what is it, it's like it's not Eureka's Castle, it's like Mr. Something's Castle, which is basically like Wipeout.
What?
So it's like, have you ever seen the show Wipeout, like
the
American version? But it's like there's a Japanese version where it's literally like a bunch of people that go through obstacle courses and like get really hurt. Like I need to find the name of it. What is the name of it? I'm Googling right now.
That actually sounds horrifying.
What is the name of this? TV show. Sorry, hold on. Dub. No, not Castle. Oh, it's Takeshi's Castle is the name of it. It's a Japanese game show. But in the United States, we basically took it and dubbed over it. And we call Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, or MXC. So if you want to Google some of the greatest like English dubbed versions of Japanese television, watch MXC episodes. It's absolutely hilarious. It was on Spike TV. It was it's a Japanese game show where they take a bunch of contestants and they run them through crazy obstacle courses. Think of like in today's terms, it'd be like if Fall Guys was real people. That's what this game show was like, and I'm not talking about like, oh, haha, like the little beans get knocked by things. Now imagine a real person getting hit by something, like a spinny thing going that fast, because it happened. So there's one episode where they call it the tadpoles, where it's like a bunch of rocks across a lake or a pond or whatever. And some of the rocks are not solid. So the idea is you have to run across it and not get hurt. And I watched one dude run full blast across, start running, hits like two, three, nails it, fourth one, fake, drops into the ocean or into the water, whatever, because his momentum's so forward, he then hits one that is not like a droppy one and slams his chest right into it and knocks the wind out of himself. And luckily, I guess they put life jackets on him because he literally looks like he's just passed out, floating in the water after slam. Dude, oh my God, it's so amazing. I feel like people should have been killed on the show. They look like they got really hurt. But the best part of it is not only is it crazy in terms of funny slapstick humor like that, but the dubs of this is hilarious. Because they give each contestant a name. It's hilarious. Sorry.
Have you seen Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged and Pokemon Abridged and those series?
I have not, no.
So I'm not going to specifically, they're very funny. There are some very off-color jokes in some of them. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend them. But if you hear people joking about Yu-Gi-Oh!, very high the chances are that they're actually referencing that show.
Oh, God,
which is just a YouTube show where all the episodes are 4 minutes long.
That's hilarious.
And they just dubbed it. It's two guys dubbing over it.
That's funny. Yeah, this was they did the full episode. They went all out and they gave the contestants backstory. So every contestant had a name and a backstory. It was here's Jimbo Fisher. He's a chicken farmer. And the only reason they say this is because he's got overalls on. And he's he's a chicken farmer. And he's super excited to be here. Let's hear your yell. And you hear the contestant yell something. It's, of course, in Japanese. So you don't actually understand it. And then they dub over the interviews of people. And they give people points. So there's winners at the end, which it's all made up. But it's a hilarious show. So if you have a day or two or some off time, just Google MXC. Or most extreme elimination challenge and watch a couple episodes because it's so good. It's got to be on YouTube somewhere. So but yeah, so now that we've talked about our favorite Power Ranger series, which has nothing to do with the past 20 minutes of that conversation, it was the original. It's the only one that mattered, and it's only the original because I think number one, Emelson didn't watch any, and number two, I didn't realize there was more than the original. So yeah,
there's a bunch. It's still ongoing. They're still making new stuff.
No.
They gotta make new toys. There's more. There's more. There is currently airing new Power Rangers content.
Hasbro owns it right now. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Hasbro owns it, so it's never dying.
Yeah.
They'll run it into the ground and keep on going.
Jesus. Power Rangers Dino Fury?
Yeah.
What is this?
I had a Beast nephew Warfers? That was super into Power Rangers.
Ninja Steel?
I saw some of the newer toys. Yeah.
What is this?
Well, he discovers
the Lost Galaxy? What the? In space?
While he figures out what the fuck is going on with Power Rangers, that is going to be our show for this week. Thank you all very much for listening. If you like this show, you enjoyed it, and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And as always, we also appreciate it if you come and say hi, hang out in Discord. And just chat, have a good time. It's a good time. Brew Lounge is the best lounge. But that is it for episode number 64. We will be back next week talking more about the new PTR stuff that's happening. We're gonna get more. Always.
Really PTR all day, every day.
By the way, I still do not have the Burning Crusade beta. Feels bad. Bye.
See ya.